I'm really excited to have the chance to visit with some wonderful musicians this hour, both of whom are more than musicians. They are inspirers, organizers, and teachers, Kim Adams and Greg Jaspers, who lead ensembles in the School of Music at Western Michigan University. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, Kara.
We're about to go into a choral Christmas, which is a longstanding tradition at Western Michigan University. And there's a fall showcase, right? And the word showcase is applicable to a choral Christmas as well, because there are so many represented vocal ensembles for this weekend.
This concert features, I would say, most of the vocal ensembles we have at Western. You'll have a University Chorale, Collegiate Singers, Cantus Femina, Gold Company, of course. Our Holiday Grand Chorus and Campus Choir also joins us this year.
I stopped counting. I got lost around four or five. some of the students participate in multiple ensembles.
Mm-hmm. You'll see every singer on the program will be a part of the grand chorus, and many of the students will be in, I would say, two ensembles. Yeah, sometimes more.
Yeah, yeah.
And switching between Gold Company and Chorale, Cantus Femina, and other groups, it depends.
We have a lot of multi-talented students at Western.
That's true.
Which makes Kim's job all that much harder. It's not just like saying, all right, ensembles, line up and everybody sing your piece. She's really managing the people that are in more than one ensemble, because if you've experienced Choral Christmas before, you'll know that performances happen from various places in the sanctuary at First Press. And that means travel time for students who are running and trying to catch their breath before the next slow, beautiful holiday ballad that they're going to sing. And it's a lot of work behind the scenes to make all of that flow so smoothly. But it's pretty amazing, the different elements that Kim pulls together for this event.
Would you tell our listeners when and where these concerts are?
So the concert this year is Saturday, December 1st, and there's two concerts that day, one at 4 and one at 7:30, and it's held at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Kalamazoo.
And that's a familiar venue for this event, right?
Yes, we've held it here as long as I've been at Western, and I think for decades prior, as far as I'm aware. Mm-hmm. And it is a ticketed event, but tickets are sold at the door and online through Miller Auditorium.
That's milleroditorium.com. The poster and event is also listed at the School of Music website, wmich.edu/music/events. Let's hear more about A Choral Christmas. We have a lot of music to dive into, and perhaps we could start off by listening to some, is it English Renaissance music?
Yeah. So one of the pieces featured on the program is one of my favorite Renaissance pieces, and considered actually to be one of the best Renaissance motets coming out of England in this period.
Oh, must be Thomas Tallis, William Byrd?
Nope. Robert Parsons.
Who?
This is Robert Parsons' Ave Maria out of the Dalpart books. And Parsons was, he died actually right when he was becoming most popular. Not to put a sad story out there, but he died by drowning in a river. And I always come with some weird bit of knowledge. But this particular piece, it's a five-part motet, an Ave Maria setting that's non-liturgical. And what makes it interesting is that Parsons was composing during a time of great religious upheaval. In that the liturgy was changed from Latin to English, and then from English to Latin, and then from Latin to English. And so this is a Latin setting of a motet. And all of the critical commentary around this motet uses words like glorious, rapt, sublime. And so what you'll hear is a cantus firmus treatment in the soprano, where the soprano sings the same thing six times, each time rising one pitch level.
Ooh.
And the soprano sits far above the rest of the voices, which sit in a low, dark register. And so it's one of my favorite pieces. And University Chorale will be singing it on Choral Christmas, Saturday, December 1st.
Thank you.
We're visiting with Dr. Kim Adams and Greg Jaspers, who are leading portions of A Choral Christmas this Saturday. Two performances at 4 and 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available at the door or in advance through the Miller Auditorium box office. And we just heard a piece from the English Renaissance, a setting of the Ave Maria, Kim, that you described as one of your favorites, and also told us to listen for those high sopranos repeating and yet increasing pitch throughout the piece. It seems like a simple device, and yet what it creates is really glorious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have a theme around this program?
This year's theme is really about love. So many of the pieces in our program this year are centered around the idea of love. Love incarnate, love inside of each one of us, and then the love that we share with each other. That's one of the things I find most beautiful about the winter holiday season, is the sharing of love between human beings. And this year's Choral Christmas reflects a lot of that.
Do you have to start planning when the sun is still shining bright and we can sit on our porches at 10 o'clock at night having our gins and tonics?
Absolutely. Choral Christmas is born in July. So it always, when the Christmas in July jokes come up, for me, it's a very real thing because my living room floor is covered in Choral Christmas music at that time.
Wow.
So do you defer all responsibility, Greg, until the last moment because you've already got plenty to go to be doing with Gold Company and GC2?
Well, that's a great question. And actually, I did want to make the point of, you know, Gold Company is fortunate to be asked to be on this concert, but that started about maybe our fourth year of being included. And so before Kim and I got here, Gold Company, to our knowledge, was not a part of Choral Christmas. And
there's some sort of invisible barrier.
Yeah, well, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people perhaps thought that Gold Company always performed with their microphones and their sound system, and if they couldn't dance, they didn't want to do it. But I attended Choral Christmas, and Kim or D. Gauthier said to me, you know, there's no reason Gold Company shouldn't be here. And I said, I would love that. So we tried it, and it was really great. It was really fun, and it's really wonderful to be a part of that. But, you know, we will sing just two pieces. We typically sing just two pieces, and they're spread throughout the concert on Saturday. So, you know, I know better than to try to muck up any of Kim's production that she's working on since July, because she works really hard at this and has it. I think, you know, probably you've done it several times now, so you probably have a system too. But normally she just emails to say, what would Gold Company like to sing this year? And, you know, every once in a while there's a question about, is there an intro that allows for two singers to walk into the performance a little bit late? How big is Gold Company this year? Can you guys handle without, you know? So we talk about those kinds of things. But yeah, all of the factors. I mean, I know this from producing the School of Music Showcase Spectacular. All of those crazy behind-the-scene factors that you would never think play into how you program a concert. And the fact that you know, Kim is able to program a concert with a theme and the music follows that narrative and that line, and she manages to get all of these other, you know, mechanisms behind the scenes to work is nothing short of miraculous, I'd say.
May I admit that I enjoyed what might have been just a bootleg video of Gold Company from, was it last year's Choral Christmas, singing a song I seem to remember was a modern song, but it brought tears to your eyes because the sentiment was still so pure and precious. And it sounded great on Facebook. Do you remember that, Greg?
If it was it The World for Christmas? I Only Want the World for Christmas. Does that sound familiar? That's an original song written by Anders Edenroth of The Real Group. And I think Gold Company, that video has been around a couple years because we did it two or three years ago, and then Cantus Femina did it last year, accompanied with the piano. And then and I think there's also one out there of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, too, but which we're doing again this year. So,
Did you also perform with the Battle Creek Orchestra, Symphony Orchestra?
We did something called Holiday Gold 2 years ago.
2 years.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So you're interested in keeping Gold Company active between fall and the showcase in February. With, of course, holidays are a great time to for all singers everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they, if you don't do anything in between sneak preview and the big show in February, you know, they might wonder, what are we doing here? But so it is nice to have something to do. But more importantly, I really feel that it's important for our students to feel part of this choral community. I mean, even though we're singing, you know, jazz music and this is still a choral ensemble. This is still communities of people singing together. And so, and we keep encouraging our students to do both, be able to sing in different styles. Kim and I actually took both ensembles on a tour a couple of years ago, one bus, two choirs out to New York and back. And so it's, you know, I think we both feel that it's a sign of health and wellness in a musical community for these different ensembles to work together, to put something together, to be part of it all. So it's great to have Gold Company active, but it's also great, I think, for all of our students to see all of the different things that are happening in the choral program here at Western. And so I'm really grateful for the opportunity that Gold Company has.
And for the community, too. We have a phrase that we use internally to refer to all of our vocal ensembles at Western. We've been calling them the choral forces. But really, I think it's a little bit more of a choral family in that, you know, we all get together, we all work together, and we put on this performance that's, you know, it is about all of us sharing with each other, but it's also about us sharing with the community. And my favorite thing about this concert, too, is that the audience sings with us. It's all about that invitation that we all can use our voices, our brains, and our hearts to sing together, regardless of style, regardless of experience.
Greg, what song would you like to play for listeners right now?
I would love to play the Singers Unlimited recording of Deck the Hall.
This is
Gene Perling's arrangement. And if you know anything about the Singers Unlimited, they are a four-voice studio group only. You'll hear a great deal more than four parts in this arrangement. But there were four studio singers in Chicago who got together originally while singing jingles for, you know, Kellogg's and all those products that we grew up on in the 70s and 80s, but then they had this, they really got to indulge their own musicianship with their endeavor as the Singers Unlimited. So this is Gene's Deck the Hall.
Merry, 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 merry Christmas. La, 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 la. Have yourself a merry Christmas. Oh, deck the halls with boughs of holly.
We're in the studio with Greg Jaspers, director of Gold Company, and Kim Adams, who leads the university chorale, director of choral studies at Western Michigan University, and we're previewing A Choral Christmas. How many works are actually on this program, Kim? Are we talking dozens? you have a look on your face like you haven't stopped the count.
The exact number, I'm not sure. Dozens is probably appropriate. I can tell you that the musical running time of the program is, I believe, 72 minutes and 48 seconds.
I'll set my...
Or, you know, give or take a few.
Check your tempos, everybody. Check your tempos.
Are you adding in applause to that calculation?
Or? No.
It does tend to run in segments or you know, performed without applause.
Mm-hmm. The full show actually runs without applause. That's actually what makes the logistical transition so difficult, is that there's no applause to cover people walking to and from places. But yeah, we have no applause the whole show, and then hopefully people save it up and really let it out and let it rip at the end. But it's what that does is it draws more attention to the musical transitions, the text connections from piece to piece, and the overall feel that we want the audience to leave with.
That, and it's something you start thinking about in July.
Like, absolutely.
How to create a narrative and an enjoyable concert.
Well, music should connect with people. It should always have some sort of communication, some sort of message. And for this particular program, when there is no applause, people are really left with their thoughts and they're left with their feelings from piece to piece. And if that's not managed carefully, it gets a little awkward. So it takes a long time to manage that out and to make sure that the message is clear and not detracted from by mistakes or poor transitions.
Mm-hmm. The programs are at 4 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. on Saturday at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Kalamazoo. And for those who tuned in during the music, we should mention that we heard a fantastic arrangement from Singers Unlimited, did you say?
Mm-hmm. The Singers Unlimited, yep.
They're Chicago-based. Are they still around as a group?
No, they're not. Well, so that was the group. Most of the recording happened in the 70s, and and they would travel to Germany to a studio in the Black Forest, and where Gene would bring his arrangements, and these four would jump in the studio and record all of these parts and multi-track. That was way before there was pitch correction, the ability to slide, you know, different takes around. And so they were consummate studio musicians. So the Singers Unlimited, now Gene passed away in the early 2000s. Len Dressler, I forget when he passed away. It was before Gene. So the two that are left are Don Shelton and Bonnie Herman. Bonnie still lives in Chicago, and I just saw her in September at my birthday party, and, you know, she does as much work as she wants to, she says. and Don is still working in the Los Angeles area, and they're transitioning to be closer to their daughter, Jennifer, in Dallas, who's an alum of Western's program and is the director of vocal jazz at University of North Texas. But so those two members of Singers Unlimited are still with us. Yep.
Wow. And considered innovators in the field and on albums?
Definitely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was, I mean, you know, what's funny about the Singers Unlimited is that they never really... we look at them as a real pillar in the vocal jazz community and, you know, a sound that a lot of vocal jazz groups will emulate, certainly if they're singing one of Gene's arrangements. And my predecessor, Steve Zegree, compelled Gene Perling to write exclusively for Gold Company. So there are pieces in the Gold Company library that Gene wrote just for Gold Company. So we have that sound personally written for this ensemble in this program. But they were really just, you know, getting together to sing music they loved. And they recorded with Oscar Peterson. They recorded with Rob McConnell and the Boss Brass. So they've had a lot of different collaborations, but it was never with the mission of we're going to advance vocal jazz or create vocal jazz. I don't know if they even called it that. You know, it's almost in hindsight that we say, you know, Gene, that's pretty jazzy, you know, your use of harmony. And Gene is really well known for not being a theorist at all. Like, he was a piano player, and the voicings you hear are really out of his hands and his ears, but not with any technical or theoretical analysis. You know, it's almost like Bach, where you go back and realize that there must have been like divine inspiration coursing coursing through his mind and his ears, because the music is, it's so easy to analyze and figure out what it is. But for Gene, that it came from his ear. So
we've just heard what could be a little bit of a, you know, music education class, a little bit of a lecture from from Greg, but so,
sorry about that.
So fascinating. And I, you know, parents, send your kids to Western if they want to gain appreciation for an art form from some great faculty, including Kim, who can also start us down a road of taking a piece and explaining, you know, taking it to a microscopic level and then bringing it back out to, you know, the basic meaning of a piece. I can tell that both of you just love music and what you do. There's, speaking of newer pieces, there's a piece on this concert that I assume is a new work, and it remembers Matthew Shepard, who mm-hmm. should be a familiar name to many, who tragically was beaten and died, and his only crime was being gay. Mm-hmm. And this was how many years ago now? Like 20?
Yeah, years ago? 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so why this piece? Why now?
Well, so Craig Hella Johnson, director of Conspirare, one of America's most well-known and one of America's older professional choirs, he was inspired to write an oratorio.
Which is a bigger kind of piece.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you just mentioned Bach and divine inspiration. Mm-hmm. This oratorio is, I would say, loosely inspired by the passions of Bach, and it tells the story of Matthew Shepard, who 20 years ago was brutally murdered as a hate crime. Mm-hmm. And just a few weeks ago was interred in Washington mm-hmm. National Cathedral. And so this oratorio tells this story. We're actually performing the very last movement of the oratorio called All of Us. And this particular movement asks the question, how do we restart after grief, after devastation? The text actually asks the question, what could be the song, where do we begin again? And how do we begin in order to find joy? And the conclusion that it comes to is that only through love can we recover from tragedy. And the last movement of this oratorio references specifically an evergreen. It says, this evergreen, this heart, this soul now moves us to remake our world. And it talks very specifically about the love inside all of us and how our hearts need to reach out to one another. And through that love, we remake our world, this beautiful creation, into something spectacular and splendid.
Music and lyrics by Craig Hella Johnson?
Yeah, and it's absolutely beautiful. This particular movement features a gospel trio and actually references Bach in two ways, by incorporating a chorale through the middle and by taking the gospel trio, which introduces the piece and mimics the classic, what you hear in Bach cantatas, the three swirling oboes. And so he essentially imitates Bach as the movement comes to a close with the gospel trio over top of the choir singing a chorale. It's magnificent.
Where begin again? Who can meet us there? Where
piece you almost certainly haven't heard before. It's a brand new work by Craig Hella Johnson. I was just thinking of a Christopher name. If you tuned in during that gospel-inspired music, you are listening to an interview with Kim Adams and Greg Jaspers, who will be leading choral ensembles this Saturday in two performances of A Choral Christmas. As Kim was explaining before, there are dozens of pieces on this program. They're interconnected. The audience will sit in silence with no breaks for applause, so that the effect can multiply, perhaps over time, mm-hmm. as is the practice for many years now. The hall again is the Presbyterian First Pres Downtown Presbyterian Church, decorated for the holidays, and there will also be some interesting things to watch as the members of different choruses and ensembles move about. It's not all static and placed straight up front, mm-hmm. correct?
Right. The choirs will be singing from multiple locations, including the organ loft in the back of the church, the choir loft in the front, both side transept balconies, the front stairs, and University Chorale actually walks down that center aisle holding real lit candles during the Veni, Veni, Emmanuel processional chant that they sing.
You did mention audience carols.
Yes. And so the singing also happens from all of the pews that the audience sings in. We'll be doing three group carols this year with Wilcox descants and the beautiful organ playing of Carl Schrock.
Right. Who's always been part of this. How did you discover this new work by Craig Hella Johnson? And was there significant press or a splash about it?
Well, Consperari has been doing a tour this year around the country with the oratorio. So they've been performing it. They performed it through Michigan and through several other states. And they all traveled to Washington, too. But I have some colleagues that sing with the group, and I try to stay up on the most modern choral news as best I can.
Both of you do, yeah. And is the world of it getting bigger or smaller for you? I mean, do you find more familiarity as the years go by, or just realize, wait, I need to do even more study?
I think that it's a little bit of both, but you know, the more you know, the more you know you don't. So the world just gets bigger and bigger the more you dive into music.
Yeah, I think too that, you know, there, this idea, and we talked to, both Kim and I talked to students who are here to audition about where our alums are working these days, and they're certainly able to take advantage of this newer professional opportunity, small chamber, professional chamber choirs. And, you know, most people would think about Chanticleer, and Chanticleer really led the way and created, you know, a template, I think, for other professional ensembles that have since sprung up, Consperari being one of them, Santa Fe Desert Chorale. We just had Voces 8 here a couple weeks ago at First Press,
right.
And one of our alums, Blake Morgan, is in that. So
Seraphic Fire?
Seraphic Fire, Cantus from out coming out of St. Olaf. I think, you know, and it's so easy. I mean, if you want to sing with a couple friends, you know, mm-hmm. come to my apartment on Monday night and we'll start something. And so I think, you know, it's wonderful that that's happening. And it means that groups are popping up everywhere to varying levels of you know, success or recognition. But it's
just
really
like
exciting.
Everyone was starting garage bands. You know,
right?
When rock and roll was at its highest.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a sort of choral renaissance happening,
mm-hmm.
In slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
Voces 8 joined us from England, right?
Right.
That's a British ensemble, and yep. The same idea of small groups of singers being able to do really high-level material is blossoming way beyond the United States.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of small and choirs being able to do high-level stuff, what is another song we can play, Greg, from the Gold Company repertoire?
Well, we can listen to, this is not Gold Company, but this is the New York Voices, Darman Meter's arrangement of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and Gold Company will be performing this on Saturday at Choral Christmas, so we can check that one out.
Let's do it.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to
a lovely setting of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Greg Jaspers picked it out for Gold Company to sing this Saturday in a Choral Christmas, which, let me remind listeners, includes the University Chorale, Cantus Femina, Collegiate Singers, Gold Company, and the Campus Choir, and the audience as well. Kim Adams and Greg Jaspers here for the last few minutes of this hour to preview the concert. We're going to leave you with another piece of music, I think one that the University Chorale will perform. I guess, what are our last thoughts? What have we missed out on saying about these performances? What do they represent to the students? Are they just tired and don't feel like it? Or are they? Do they often kind of find that last burst of energy before the holidays and make a really memorable performance happen?
It is that last burst of energy. It is amazing to watch them walk into the rehearsal room and walk into First Presbyterian for rehearsals. We had our first grand chorus rehearsal for this right before the Thanksgiving break. And it was amazing to see 160 people in our choral rehearsal room in the Dalton Center, and the energy in there was amazing. Everybody was singing their hearts out, and every time we stopped and worked through something and made it better, you could see people's faces light up with that great feeling you get when you've solved a problem. And it's just, this concert is always so exciting because they give so much of themselves to it. And then we leave that concert, head right into the last week of classes and finals.
Mm-hmm.
And they're often surrounded by family at this concert. A lot of parents attend.
That's what I was thinking. That's one of the best indicators of how a student feels about what they're doing, is if they, you know, make sure their parents and their family are there. And it's really, everybody invites their parents and their family. I think my parents might be coming, but you know, and they all get pictures with their family in front of the church because the church is so beautifully decorated too. And I think, you know, because this is a tradition, you know, students who've done it before usually convey to the newer students that this is a really meaningful concert. And I think that, you know, is in large part, again, due to Kim's work to create an experience. It's not just a musical show and tell, but there's a deeper thread and a deeper meaning in every Choral Christmas I've been a part of. And, you know, I think most of us, whether we know it or not, we need time to sit down, be still, you know, be in one place as a community for 90 minutes and share music. So I think that in the middle of it, even myself just sitting there listening every year, you realize what a special experience you're having, and that it's nourishing for your spirit. It's invigorating. It reconnects you to why we do what we do. So it's anybody who attends, I'll give you your money back if you don't have that experience on Saturday.
Yeah. And to be honest, so much of choral tradition comes from Christian churches through the centuries, but this certainly shouldn't prevent someone from joining you for Choral Christmas. Yes, some of the text will be taken from these sources, but I think, Kim, you've paid attention to messages that all religions or no religions can incorporate and get behind.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining me today. Keep up the rehearsals and have that last burst of joy and energy on Saturday. Kim, what can we hear after this? We have a Durafle and we have one other piece. I can't remember quite.
Well, the other piece is Once in Royal David City.
Oh, yes.
It's the classic opener of Lessons and Carols from King's College. This is actually, it started in 1919, so this is the 99th anniversary.
Wow.
Of that piece being the opener at Lessons and Carols. And it'll be the first carol that we all sing together in the program.
Well, thank you, Kim. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Kara.